this chapter, it starts out 2 Samuel chapter 11. In my Bible, it's got a subheading entitled David's Great Sin. David's Great Sin. And the first three words, then it happened. I come back to this chapter whenever I read this chapter, whenever I come upon this chapter, I just recoil. I just read it and feel, David, my dear friend, I am so sorry for you. And you just think, oh God, keep us. Keep us. Men, women, older men, older women, younger men, younger women, all of us. Well, I tell you, David, he conquered a Goliath. But that enemy there was nothing compared to the one that got him. These fleshly lusts are, they're a bigger giant than Goliath. And you look at David's life and you can't believe it happened. You know, then it happened. You can't believe it happened. As David, you know, is set before us, he was a standard. He was an example of godliness and righteousness, always being set forth. He was a man after God's heart. He was a man who just in such a rare way was a man who sought after God's heart. An intimacy with God. Now, he was a man who was in love with God and had a passion for God, who thirsted for God like the deer pants for the water brooks. And yet it happened. How can it be? How can it be? God is just, you know, so transparent. I mean, he put it in there. He put it, it's in the Bible. Written down for our instruction. Written for our learning. It's written for our admonition. It's written for our warning. It's written that we might take heed and not fall in to the same miry clay and horrible pit. It's written for our benefit. It would take more than one hand to number the pastors and pastors' wives that I know of that have been destroyed, ruined. Their work, their ministry, their reputation has been ruined by this sin right here. And it's just an ox to the slaughter. It's that type of thing that we're looking at here. Satan knows if he cannot get us with a sword, then he'll do it with a smile. That's the case, you know, with Baal-Peor. And Balaam counseled Balak, you know, he told him how he could get at him. And you couldn't conquer him with a sword. God is with him like the horns of a wild ox. And so here's what you do. Bring some women in. That led to their defeat, their downfall. We ought to be warned here to hate sin, to love righteousness. It didn't make any difference that David was about maybe in his 50s. I mean, it was not a case of youthful lust. It doesn't matter that the body is drying up a little bit. Still, you know, the thing we're dealing with is in the mind. And that's where Satan's workshop is. And so young, old, it doesn't matter, does it? It's still something that we must fight Amalek to the very end. And we either kill it or it will kill us. There is no way that we can satisfy lust. There's nothing to do it. It's out to get you. It's out to devour you. It will take you right down. There is nothing that will satisfy. It didn't matter whether he had 100 wives. It did not. Sin and lust cannot be satisfied. It refuses to be satisfied. There is only one thing that can be done with sin, and that's kill it. And it didn't matter that he'd had all these other victories. victories over Goliath. It didn't matter that he was a great warrior. He was outstanding. He was a man of repute. It didn't matter that he had slain, you know, Saul his thousands, David his 10,000s. Didn't matter that he'd had attained that success in that area. In other words, the point here is that we are obliged before God and for our own soul to watch, watch, watch to the very end. To the end. He endures to the end. And he walked around on the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman. He saw. Man fell with a look. Says she saw that the fruit was good for food. Man fell with a look, and he is saved by a look, looking to Jesus. And so here he saw a woman. The power, do we realize? I think we do. The power of the lust of the eye. I mean, how great a forest was set aflame by such a little fire. Just a look. And the look led to an inquiry, and the inquiry to an invitation, and on it down it went, resulting finally in much death. Here's where it began, a look. I mean, here's a man whose conscience was so sensitive, you know, that he was smitten in his heart when he just snipped Saul's robe. Here his conscience was already hardened and seared, and he tries to cover it up, and the Lord sent Nathan. God uses different means, doesn't he, to come after us to recover us. I mean, in the case of Peter, it was a rooster's crow and a tender look. In the case of Job, it was just a majestic revelation. And the case of Jonah, it was some kind of a plant. But here God sent a prophet, a man with a word for him. And Nathan, you can imagine, it was a bit of a challenge, a bit of a daunting thing for him to go and reprove this king. Finally tells him, verse 7, you are the man I'm talking about. And David was smitten and repented. Verse 13, I have sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said to David, the Lord has also taken away your sin, and you'll not die. So David was spared, and you can understand the overflow in his psalm. In Psalm 32, how blessed is the man whose sin is forgiven, whose iniquity was covered. And David was spared, but there were consequences. There was much death resulting from his sin. Incredible. You remember that story about the man, the mountain climber, who was up there alone, and a big rock fell on his arm and pinned him. And he waited for some days, couldn't get free, and finally took his knife and cut his own arm off. And so the Lord says, you know, it's better that you enter into life without a member of your body than to be thrown whole into hell. And we will not be sorry for dealing radically with sin. We will not be sorry for dealing radically with sin.